Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
Time.
You don't have to think about it. It is right here. It is right now.
All in love so strange. Said you now, I know.
How you doing today, James Merrillat?
Fine. I'm good.
Okay.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm a little down about this Nuggets news.
Yeah.
But no, otherwise, I'm good. I'm good. I just like to throw you a curveball because everybody always says, fine. How you doing? I'm good. I'm fine. You know, when you get that, you know. That is, it actually does kind of have me in a little bit of a grumpy mood. I know we'll get into it as the show goes on, but otherwise, I am fine, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing good, man.
See how I'm learning how to throw the question back at you?
Like, whoa, whoa.
I know,
James,
I know.
That's your question. I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Actually, came in here early. I recorded an episode of the Mile High Hoops podcast that we're going to record here during the off season as well. Thanks to our friends at Superbook sponsoring it. I came in earlier in the week, I think on Monday, and just reacting to what happened to Phoenix actually on Sunday. So it was Monday and was hot on that. And you and I agreed on a lot of the stuff with what we saw with Phoenix. But I had to circle back here and record an episode, which will be posted here hopefully within the hour, a full dedicated conversation to the news that we're going to talk about right here, right now. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. But let's just start with what we know and the report. Shams Charania yesterday afternoon / evening reports that Tim Connelly is in advanced talks, like beyond the exploratory stage, with the Minnesota Timberwolves, which is a part of just the sort of the negative tone that I have to this conversation. It's not the Lakers. It's not the Miami. It's a lateral move to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the Wolves obviously emerging as a potential threat to poach Tim Connelly. The Timberwolves identified. Now I'm taking this from Mike Singer. Identified a list of four big name GMs: Sam Presti, Oklahoma City; Bob Myers from Golden State; Masai Ujiri from Toronto. We know him well, and Tim Connelly. That's the short list. Now, according to Mike Singer and according to a person with direct knowledge of these discussions, Tim Connelly is, quote, the most gettable from a financial standpoint. Okay? A Nuggets owner, governors now, Josh Kroenke, he did not respond to a request for comment. Tim Connelly, according to sources, is in an option year of his contract. Okay, so that's sort of the baseline of what we know. I can't believe that everyone's not on the same page with this, but this is bad news for the Denver Nuggets.
It is bad news, and it was my column today at DenverFan.com, and it was a matter of, hey, here we go again, where, you know, the KSE and the Kroenkes are, if he leaves, it's because they're going cheap, and they're not going all in to win. And at some point, I mean, he was tempted to go to the Wizards a few years ago and didn't. That was money and the fact that he has ties there. He's from back there.
And that's where he came up.
Right.
Within that organization.
Now, this one, if you go to Minnesota, right, and as I wrote in my piece, it's not the Lakers or the Celtics, right? It's not.
Oh, did you say that? Because I actually didn't read your piece. I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So it's not a traditional power, right? Like, if it was the Lakers or Celtics, you get it. If you're in basketball, that's the kind of team you aspire to work for, play for, coach for, whatever. It's not a big market, right? It's not Chicago. It's not where, hey, they're going to have a lot of resources. It's not a flashy market. It's not Miami. You know, it's Minnesota. There aren't a lot of places in the NBA where you would look at it and say, you know what? That's less attractive to free agents than Denver.
Right.
Minnesota is on the list.
Right.
Maybe Utah would be higher.
Sure.
On that list, but that's it. So it would only be for money that he would go there. They have a nice young roster, right? But is it better than the Nuggets? The Nuggets have the back-to-back MVP. So it would be not only money for him, but it's money of, hey, we're in this to win it. We want to build around our young core, and that's Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns primarily, and we're going to do what it takes. So it leads me to believe, one, the Nuggets aren't willing to match what Tim Connelly's going to get up there, which is a recurring pattern that goes all the way back to Carmelo Anthony in terms of things like that. And it's a matter of, hey, how much are they, and the Nuggets really in this to win it, right? Are they going to go into the luxury tax? Are they going to do what they have to do to try to put together the pieces they need? Because Michael Malone said it's the most important offseason since he's been here. That doesn't mean standing pat.
So about the luxury tax, the Nuggets have made a decision as an organization to go into the tax. They have these contracts, but this ultimately circles back to your point that you're trying to make. That you had to get Jokic Max and Jamal Max. Then they made the decision to give Aaron Gordon a $100 million contract and max out Michael Porter Jr. That was a good sign, I thought, from the Nuggets that, like, you are trying to win, clearly here. You're not trying to pinch pennies. You have four different contracts, you know, that are going to equal about close to $1 billion. Like, sure. You're flirting with it. But that might be the exact reason why they would be unwilling to pull out the pocketbook for Tim Connelly, because that's like the third layer of commitment to win. Like, you got your players locked up, then you got your secondary sort of tier after Jamal and Jokic locked up. The next like tier of commitment is paying Tim Connelly. I had heard that he was one of the lowest. Someone else told me he was the lowest.
Correct.
The lowest paid general manager in the NBA until he got his president of basketball operations bump. I think it was 2 years ago. And apparently that puts him somewhere financially in the middle of the NBA. He's put on a short list with Sam Presti, Bob Myers, and Masai Ujiri.
Yeah.
He's getting paid not – his paycheck is not reflecting his current status in the NBA. So it is fair to not assume, but because you're not really assuming. You're kind of using logic like, yeah, you're paying one of the top five, six general managers – like the 16th general manager, and now Minnesota is apparently, from what I am hearing, offering top three, top five money.
You can't continue to lose talented people.
I'm sorry, James. I want to thank our listeners in Brighton for making 104.3 the Fan part of your day.
You can't continue to lose talented people and not have it at some point impact the organization, right? Masai Ujiri left for Toronto, and that was back after he won Executive of the Year in 2013. And he got a 5-year, $15 million deal. The Nuggets weren't willing to match it. And the spin was, well, yeah, but his wife's a supermodel, and so Toronto's a more cosmopolitan town. They want to be there. There's always a spin, right? It's like Arturas is going to go to Chicago. Well, he's got this, a chance to have more power, which is partially true. But you see assistant coaches leave, right? Mm-hmm. Mike Inouye left and he went to the Pistons. Now he's in Minnesota. It happens over and over and over.
Happened yesterday.
Jordy Fernandez yesterday mm-hmm. left and mm-hmm. he went to Sacramento to be. Right. And there's always a spin. Well, he went from the third chair to the second chair. Like, okay, but yeah, but if you paid people, if you paid your assistant coaches well, they would want to stay here until they got a chance to go be a head coach, right? Like Wes Unseld Jr. got a chance to go be a head coach. Okay, we get that. But to go from here to Sacramento?
So I'll just say this. I actually get that, going to a third chair to a second chair. Hold on. I'm not here just to disagree with you. That is a progressive move. This would not be.
Right.
This would not be. There is no spin for this.
There'll be spin. There's always spin.
The
Nuggets apologists will spin it because there's spin over and over and over.
I'm saying
again.
Not any spin that I would buy. Like when you're going from the third chair to the second chair, that's like more tangible, I think, less spin. Now, if you paid him, maybe he'd stay. But you are following an arc of like a coaching career that could lead you to head coach. This is the same position. And not only will the Nuggets be weakened the moment he walks out the door for the same title. Dude, it's in division.
Yeah.
This would be like taking one of like your stronger hosts here. And I always remember Colin Cowherd saying this, like the most impactful moves within a singular market is poaching someone you think is talented to another place within that market. This is what that would be. He would be joining your neighbor, the Timberwolves. What?
It's George Payton going to be the GM of the Raiders.
Yes, that's there what you go. There
that's
you go.
That's what it is.
Yes.
And the reason I say it goes all the way back to Carmelo Anthony is because at the time when he left, when he wanted to be traded, Carmelo's response or answers to why was because he doubted the Nuggets' commitment to winning. Because at the time, they had failed to get to advance past the Western Conference Finals in 2009, and Stan Kroenke decided we're not going to go into the luxury tax. And so Melo said, well, I'm not sure this is a franchise committed to winning. What was the spin? Lala wants to move to New York. And that's all you heard over and over and over again. And now it's as though it's, you know, chiseled into a tablet somewhere that that's why he wanted to leave. No, go back and look. He said it was because I doubt their commitment to winning. And you see it over and over and over and over again. And can you take each example and say, yeah, I can see why Jordy Fernandez would go to Sacramento, go for third chair, second chair. Sure. But if you have 10 examples of it, at some point, it's a you don't value people. You're not willing to pay going rate to keep people. And you just think, you know what? It's just a chair. We got a stack of resumes of people who would want to come be the GM. And we'll just bring in somebody cheap to fill that role. Right now, and if the Avs don't get out of the second round again, or if they don't win a cup, you know what? When they hired Michael Malone and they hired Jared Bednar, two of the lowest paid coaches in their respective sports, at some point you're building a $1 million house and putting in linoleum floors, right? Like, this is what the Avs do. It's what the Nuggets do. It's what Kroenke teams do, at least the ones that are here, of they go cheap in places they shouldn't go cheap. This would be another example of it.
My least favorite take about this is something I saw in my replies on Twitter.
I know where you're going.
I tweeted yesterday. I said, after Nikola Jokic, I think you could fairly argue that Tim Connelly is the most important person to this franchise. And it was literally like I saw a dozen of these. Hey, people are freaking out after Masai. Don't worry about it. It's like, wait, you think it's a birthright for the Denver Nuggets to get the general manager spot right because you fell into Tim Connelly after Masai Ujiri? Be careful what you wish for.
Well, and I got a lot of, you want to keep the guy, you want to put a statue up for the guy who gave MPJ a max contract and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, first of all.
And we can talk that one through, too, and I'd love
to do that. And look, does that look like it might be a bad contract? Sure, but two parts of it. One, you don't have a lot of choice when you're here. You kind of have to do it. You have to give the contracts early here, not late. And the other part of it is, If they didn't sign that deal, you can't get free agents here. So who in the heck are you going to spend that money on? Like, it's such a silly argument. And people, if it's not perfect, it's a 2022 argument. If you're not perfect, your resume doesn't have a single blemish on it, then you stink, which is ridiculous. Tim Connelly, I've been critical of some of his moves. I think some of his moves deserve criticism.
He's not batting 1,000.
But his ledger, the pros versus the cons, The scale on that is ridiculous, and anybody that doesn't think that, and anybody that doesn't think this move could be the first string you pull and the sweater starts unraveling is totally missing the boat.
And we haven't even talked about the relationships he has with these star players.
Correct.
Dude, we'll get back to it because we're...
Why it's that I'm today.
We're way over it. We got to go to commercial. We will circle back to this, I can promise you. Can the Avalanche have St. Louis singing the blues in game 2? We'll take a dive into the highly anticipated game coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Can the Avalanche put St. Louis in a 2-0 hole tonight at Ball Arena? What's the biggest storyline for you or dynamic coming into play tonight?
I think there's a few of them. I think whether or not Jordan Binnington can continue to play at that level is a huge storyline, right? Like, he was a guy who, he came in at the end of the Wild Series, won 3 straight, played really well. He didn't get the win the other night, but obviously he played well. He had 50-plus saves. Can that continue, right? Or does he go Connor Ingram and it was the aberration, and then after that he turns back into a sieve?
We'll see. Well, Connor Ingram actually played really, really well 2 games in a row. Because if you remember, game number 1, the starters pulled. He got put into the game when it was 5-0.
Well, yeah.
And ended up giving up just two goals in the last two periods. I think he stopped like high 40s or something, then followed it up with a stellar.
He played well in garbage time, but okay. Okay, I'll give you that. But to me, that's
thrown into a terrible situation.
That's the storyline, right? I think if the Avs come out and they can get a couple of goals early, and it's like, okay, we can break through on this guy, I think the floodgates are going to open. If they come out and it's similar to Tuesday night, where it doesn't seem to matter what they do, they look up at the end of the first period and they got a goose egg, then you start thinking, it gets in your head, right? I'm like, we can't get anything past this guy.
Right.
So to me, that's the number one storyline. Because I think St. Louis is going to do what they did the other night. People talk about how they only had 20-something shots, and it's a team with seven guys that had 20 goals. It was by design. They were like a soccer team that has a 1-0 lead and then just tries to play defense for 80 minutes. That's how they came out from the get-go of, hey, let's just, you know, pull everybody back, try to keep this thing close, hope we get a couple of good bounces, maybe a couple calls, get a power play or two that goes our way and take our chances. It actually worked to perfection.
It did.
Because they were in a position where at the end of the game and then certainly in overtime, one bad bounce, they steal one. I mean, the TNT commentator said between the third period and overtime during that intermission, it would be an all-time fleecing if they won the game. It would have been.
Is that how they phrased it?
All-time fleecing.
That's pretty good.
It's spot on.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because the Avs outshot them 13-0 in overtime. But you get one bad bounce, one breakaway, and all of a sudden the Blues win that game. It would have been a fleecing. So I expect them to do the same thing. I'm just kind of bring everybody back, try and play conservative, don't take bad penalties. You know, and if Binnington can stand on his head a little bit again.
I think you can only do that for so long, though, because you see the adjustment after the first period. Like, St. Louis wanted to continue down that road of the first 20 minutes, but it got to be sort of more of the Avs flow, where it's sort of going up and down, using speed, going downhill. So we'll see. I agree with you. By the way, when I asked that question, like number one storyline coming out into tonight, it's Jordan Binnington. Can you do it again?
Yeah, that would probably be number one for me. Number two would be, is the rust gone? And to me, the rust for the Avs was things like the bad line change.
Mm-hmm.
It was had multiple offside penalties, the kind of thing we didn't see against Nashville.
They did.
And that's just having your timing just a tad off. So
inability to get set in a power play.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the one where they just had trouble getting across the blue line, everyone getting set.
Yep. Cale Makar didn't have a very good game. The first goal came on a when he just couldn't clear the puck.
Yep.
Just little kind of things like that are just timing issues. Or, you know, is that gone now that they're into game two? And you know, I would have said, they got better as the game went on, but the line change, the problem was right at the end of the third period.
Correct.
That allowed the tying goal. So, we shall see. I don't put the, you know, 50 shots that got saved and the five posts that got hit in with rust. I think it was more things that were timing. It was offside. It was line change. It was things like that.
Is it a little bit weird that we're here five games into the playoffs and Mikko Rantanen doesn't have a goal?
Yeah.
After having 36 of them during the regular season to lead this team?
I think it is, and I think it's something that even in the Nashville series, you know, when we were doing the post-game shows, Rachel and Will and I would bring it up, and I'd get accused of, man, you can find a negative with anything. Like, I'm not saying it's a negative. You know, they obviously were winning games, but especially when you put up a couple seven spots, you score 21 goals as a team, I believe the number was in that series.
21, so they've now scored
Nashville.
They've now scored 24 goals
right.
In five playoff games.
And he's got none.
That's just weird.
It's odd, and it kind of makes you scratch your head and say, why? And here's the reason I pointed it out, and I think probably you pointed it out. Well, at some point, he's going to have to start scoring. He's going to have to start playing like the Mikko Rantanen we expected. This can't continue if the Avs are going to get to Mission 16W, mm-hmm. right? So I think at some point he will break through. He had a couple of opportunities the other night that he and a lot of other guys had some bad puck luck. But, yeah, that's strange. I do think it was good the other night. They won a game when none of their stars scored.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had Nichushkin, Girard, and Manson.
Manson, sorry. Yeah.
Has the three goals. You.
What would that pay out?
You hit the lottery. Yeah. You hit the lottery. So I don't expect that again tonight. But, yeah, would it be nice to see Mikko Rantanen kind of break through and sort of, all right, the floodgates are starting to open. Yeah, that would be on my list of things that would be nice to see tonight.
Okay. We got the puck dropping at 7:30. That game is on TNT. Hopefully it starts on time. I'm trying.
To keep the streak alive?
I'm trying.
What's the holdup?
I do not have a ticket.
Well, you know, we got listeners. You got, you know, 303-713-1043.
Break me off. No, I'm trying to figure it out. We'll see. One of the most fun storylines to watch in Denver sports this past year got his flowers yesterday. And we'll take a dive into this young dynamo coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Fun storylines to watch in Denver sports this past year got his flowers yesterday. James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Stokely has a son graduating high school today.
Oh, the actual graduation is today.
The actual graduation is today, which, well, where I'm from is a little bit weird. Like, we did, like, graduations on Saturday.
Yeah, me
always,
too. Me
always.
Too.
So to graduate on Thursday, a little bit different. But congratulations to Cameron Stokely, who's a great kid. I don't know how he came from Stokely stock, but the kid is pure.
He has a good mom.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And congrats to all of our seniors graduating who have been through. You think about, like, if you're a senior in high school, what you've been through since really, like, your sophomore year, the spring of your sophomore year, just the everything that was packed into that. My heart breaks for most of it.
No doubt. It's crazy. Like, my kids, so my 10th grader, if nothing happens between now and a week from today,
right,
it will be the first time he's been at school on the last day of school since he was in 7th grade.
Wow.
Because the last couple of years, first year, it was obviously everything was shut down, and then last year there was some sort of outbreak, so they just called it off early. So it'll be the first time. So, yeah, those kids have been through it. It's nice. They get to have graduation. It's a normal graduation. And then we're going to get a foot of snow.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's crazy. All these kids have grad parties on Saturday.
I tell you what.
Oh, my gosh.
The weather folks out there better be right.
You better be right, because I can tell you firsthand, grad parties are getting canceled.
People are canceling their plans, and they've been wrong before. So I was in New York for, I think it was Hurricane Irene.
Okay.
We were supposed to fly home, and they just canceled all the flights because it was going to hit New York, and it was going to be this, you know, the whole thing was going to have to shut down. And we woke up the next day, and it was like, you know, barely sprinkling, and everything was closed. You couldn't go to a restaurant. Starbucks was closed. Like, the subways weren't running. It was like a ghost town because they predicted that the hurricane was going to hit, you know, New York, and it was going to be a catastrophe. So I've never
better
forgiven
get this one
that.
Right.
Yeah, better get this one right.
Better get this one right.
10 years later, I'm still talking about it.
Right, and we need the moisture.
Yes, we do.
All right. One of the most fun storylines to watch in Denver sports this past year got his flowers. The NBA announced yesterday that Nuggets guard Bones Highland, named to the All-Rookie Second Team, he becomes the 9th Nuggets player in franchise history to appear on a all-rookie team, the first since Jamal Murray back in 2016-17 season. Highland, he played 69 games, averaged 10 points, nearly 3 assists, nearly 3 rebounds, shot 40% from the field in just under 20 minutes per game. He scored 20 or more 6 different times. That is very impressive. Him post All-Star break was among the most fun rookies to watch in all of the NBA, despite his 26th overall draft status. I mean, the NBA is not like the NFL, where half of the Super Bowl is undrafted, guys. The NBA high-end talent is more easily identifiable in the game of basketball. So for a late-round pick from VCU to be named to the all-rookie team, this dude knocked down 131 threes this season. That is the new franchise record, passing Jamal Murray back in his rookie season. It ranked him 2nd among rookies in the NBA. Here's the kicker. He's 2nd in the NBA. He played 828 minutes less than the top rookie. because typically this is how this goes. The bad teams get the best players. Those players play a ton. Bones is a young player on a team that was trying to win.
Yeah, and I remember being down at Brothers Barbecue for a war room right before the season started. And everybody was high on Bones because he was fun during the preseason.
I remember this.
And I remember saying, yeah, but you know what? Michael Malone's not going to play him. He doesn't want to play rookies. I remember when he was playing Jameer Nelson instead of Jamal Murray.
I remember the exact conversation.
Right? But he had to. He had to play him because injuries, right? Michael Porter Jr. gets hurt. P.J. Dozier gets hurt.
Yep.
You start running out of veteran guys that you trust, and you have to play him. And sometimes you fall ass-ackwards into a find, right? And it worked out well for the Nuggets. So he deserves to be on the second team. Now, though, for me, it's, well, what does it turn into? What's the next level? What can he become, right? You can't plateau. This can't be, hey, this is as good as he's going to get. Can he take the next step and become what? Like, can he become a Jordan Poole type of a player? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the next level for Bones? What can he be on this team once everybody is back? Because at some point, Jamal Murray is going to be back. Michael Porter Jr. is going to be back. They're going to be healthy. What's the role that we should look at and say, that's what Bones is going to be?
Let me throw this out there to you. Is Bones just flat out good enough where he has to start? And if this is what we're seeing in year one, you can sort of fairly prognosticate, like, if you're on the all-rookie team, like, all these guys are going to start for their teams next year. Bones is in a different scenario here with Jamal coming back. You know, Monte's still here. But, like, is he to a point where, like, that guy has to play major minutes? That means he has to start. Do you move Jamal Murray off the ball and look at a potential starting five of Bones, Highland, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic?
I like that for a couple of reasons. One, I like getting him in that group, right, and seeing if he can blossom and what he can turn into. The other part of it is I think if you're going to have Will Barton back, then I like the Monte Morris-Will Barton combination coming off the bench. You've got some scoring. You've got some veterans. That was a group that – and look, part of it was because they were shorthanded, but – man, how many times did we talk about it this year? When they got to go to their bench, it just unravels.
Especially the first two-thirds of the season. It was just a disaster.
For sure. So it's like, okay, well, then you've got some guys there that make you feel better about it. Monte in the past has been fine with that role, almost embraced it to some extent of, hey, you're coming off the bench. You're kind of leading that group. I think that would be something that would be interesting to look at. But will Michael Malone trust Bones Highland next year to play that big of a role? Because there will be some growing pains. There will be some times where he's going to be like, oh, man, it's not his night. And, it, you know, him sort of having to learn on the fly is going to hurt the team. So it's short-term pain for long-term gain. Is he willing to do that? I don't know. He's a guy that historically, and I'm going to say the same thing I said at the war room, historically trusts veteran players. So I know Bones won't be a rookie, but he also had Bones sitting on the bench in playoff games this year, late in games, and was going with Will Barton, even though Will Barton had played awful in the game up to that point, where it would have made more sense to get Bones Highland valuable postseason minutes because you knew you were going to lose the series anyway.
Yeah, but coaches don't think like that.
I get it, but they're not going to think like that at the start of the year either.
They might, though. They might. You're talking about an all-NBA caliber rookie. Like, this may have to be the way of the organization. And instead of saying, hey, we're not going to win the postseason, so let's play Bones, it might be not I don't want to say overly worried, because Michael Malone wants to win every single game, of course, to sometimes a detriment. But could it be, we're okay with going through an experimental phase earlier in the season and sort of hoping water finds its level 25, 30 games in, as opposed to trying to reintegrate them later in that starting lineup?
I think that would make sense. That's what logic would tell you to do. I just don't know if that's what he's going to do. Right now, he has given himself the out. He's already laid the groundwork for they're going to struggle early, because you're not going to have bubble Jamal and you're not going to have peak Michael Porter Jr. So maybe he's buying himself some time there. But that's what they should do for the long term. And long term isn't 3 years from now. It's, hey, by the end of next season, what do you want your starting lineup to be heading into the playoffs? What you just described, I think, makes more sense with Monte and Will coming off the bench if they don't trade Will. That makes sense to me, but you're going to have to go through the pains early in the year. And I don't know if that's something, especially as Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. try to kind of get themselves acclimated, if that's another variable that Michael Malone is willing to stomach.
We got to go here, but on the heels of that, I just want to say, if you are trying to win a championship, Will Barton's not a starter. If you're trying to win a championship, Monte Morris is terrific, but he's not a starting point guard on a championship team. Could he be a backup point guard on a championship team? Yes. Could Will Barton be sort of a microwave role, getting 12, 13 points a game off the bench? Yeah, but both of those guys in starting roles, for a team that wants to win it all, championship teams don't look like that from a personnel standpoint.
I 100% agree on both those. I also think this is a team, given the fact they have Nikola Jokic, a true point guard is less important on this team than on others. You can get, I mean, I like Jamal Murray played point guard. He was listed as a point guard for most of his time as a starter.
But he's really a two.
He's not a classic point guard. No. Yeah, he's a two. He's a two.
Okay, how much different is Nathaniel Hackett than Vic Fangio? A short video says it all. We'll explain next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Different is Nathaniel Hackett than Vic Fangio? Said a short video says it all when we were going into the last break. The Broncos went bowling. Did you see this?
Yeah. I thought that was great.
It's great.
They didn't miss a practice to go do it. They were lifting. And they went bowling. That's fine. There's 24 hours in a day. They didn't just cancel practice. Two of the three OTAs coming off of five consecutive non-playoff seasons and four consecutive losing seasons just say, we don't need to work. Let's have field day. Let's bring out the dunk tank.
So you and I, we disagree on a lot, but we agree on a whole lot too. And you and I were synced up on that. Even just from an optic standpoint, tone-setting standpoint, culture standpoint, you are trying to build that up. And canceling practice for fun time, you know, I never loved it. But the video is hilarious. Like, you can tell all the Broncos are fully invested in this bowling thing.
For sure.
They had the lanes lined, right? And the bowlers got his teammates to the left and right of him. And there's pressure and everyone's got their phones out. And
yeah.
There you see kind of Nathaniel Hackett standing in the alley, like on the lane. He's standing on like one of the little partitions with his hat on backwards, and he's sort of just like the commandant of the whole thing. And Mike Kliss, I know you reacted to it. Our 9 News Broncos insider joins us courtesy of Bet River Sportsbook. The difference between Vic Fangio and Nathaniel Hackett, you would need maybe a 10-page report to document it all. And I think that was an interesting microcosm you were reacting to on Twitter.
Yeah, first of all, never mind Fangio. I'm not sure many head coaches would do that. That was a covered gutter, by the way, that I think he was standing on, and a whole bunch of players were standing on. And it looked like some kind of contest. I don't know, Bowles threw it and picked up 9, and Kareem Jackson picked up the spare, and it looked like a great bonding moment for the Broncos. And yeah, they canceled whatever workout and said, let's go bowling today. And, you know, I think, what is the date? May 19th. I don't think anything really matters very much, even for a new team, you know, basically a new team with a new quarterback and new head coach. I mean, you're going to have plenty of time to get all this down. And, you know, he's Hackett's a different type of head coach. You know, he's got the, you know, I was wondering if his coach's coach recommended this, you know, Vieira. Although all coaches have had these type of things. Sometimes the Broncos break for golf. They've had golf outings before. You know, this was the bowling, I guess, is, you know, when you golf, you're separated. 4x4x4, you know, 400 yards apart. This is something where you're closer together, and seemed like fun. I don't know if it'll help or not, but I don't think it hurt.
Mike, you know, all of this stuff, and I think Nathaniel Hackett's personality is great. It's a breath of fresh air, and it's, you know, just going down there when we hang out at, you know, mini camp and things, you can just tell there's a different vibe, and all of that is good. But if they lose to Seattle, or they start off 2-3 like they did in the first year with Peyton Manning here, right? And the transition is bumpy. At what point does the head coach, you know, always having a quip at the press conferences and playing running back during practice, at what point do people start to say, this is a little bit like Rick Neuheisel taking everybody tubing up at CU, right? Like there's a that only is cute and funny for so long, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I've talked to Hackett about that, you know, all the different personalities and the different style. If you lose, then you get criticized. In fact, when you're different and you lose, I think the barbs are a little sharper in the criticism as they were for Neuheisel. So you're right. You know, we'll see what happens. You hate to go ahead and guess that they're going to lose to Seattle right away. But that would be a tough one to lose with all the hype that is going to go into that game. But we'll see how he adjusts. You know, he's got a chance to adjust too. Right now, what I've seen, you know, he does work. I've heard he's a grinder as far as, you know, Hackett, as far as he really works his coaches. He really works the tape. He works the roster. He does work to communicate with the players. And so we'll see. For right now, guys, like you alluded to there, James, I think all in all, they kind of needed this. They needed a little vibrancy in the atmosphere inside their building, and they sure got that and then some.
Mike, who's the starting running back week one?
Javonte Williams, I would think.
Who's the starting tight end?
That will be it. That's a little more interesting. I'm going to go Albert O as the starting tight end, but Greg Dulcich maybe starts game six, maybe something like that. I think Dulcich eventually will be the every down starter. I'm just it's tough to bet on a rookie right off the bat, a third round rookie, but Dulcich has a chance. He does have a chance. That will be a competition. And but I would go with the guy who's been doing it for 2 years and has some talent versus the guy with talent and no experience.
Mike, we're going to all gather down there. I believe it's Monday for OTAs. They get underway. Two parts to this. One, do we expect perfect attendance? I mean, Melvin Gordon, kind of dovetailing into Zach's question there, is notorious for not being an OTA guy. Is he going to be an OTA guy this year? So is everybody going to be there? And when you walk in through the gate on Monday, what's number one on your list of things you're going to be watching?
Well, number one on the list of things I'm going to be watching, and number two on the list, and three and four and five on the list is going to be Russell Wilson and the offense. And as far as perfect attendance, I think they had all but two or three guys there at OTAs. Tom Compton, a veteran, was one of the few, and they said it was a personal thing, but that the personal thing might have been that he voluntarily decided not to do the voluntary mini camp. I'm not sure about that. But otherwise, it'll be close to 100%. Melvin Gordon has been around for these, at least to some, phase one, phase two workouts that the team has had.
Mike, do you think that was communicated by George Payton before they re-signed him? That like, hey, we'd like to bring you back at the number that we want you at, but also we're trying to reset things here, and we'd really appreciate if you were around with a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback.
Maybe, but you have to be careful because it is voluntary and it is a CBA. And had that been communicated to Melvin, there could be some – you got to be careful there's not pushback from the union. But maybe there's a subtle ways of communicating that. It's not necessarily – I did run it up the flagpole, and I was told no because you can't. Whether that's – whether there was something else behind the scenes, I'm not sure.
Hey, Mike, real quick, in a minute or less, we've been having a fun little debate here behind the scenes. Is Russell Wilson a Hall of Famer right now with the two Super Bowl appearances, the one Super Bowl win, nine Pro Bowls? Do you think he's a Hall of Famer right now, or is there still work to be had in that category?
Yeah, good question. I think nine Pro Bowls out of 10 puts him maybe he's not a first ballot right now. How's that?
I like that.
But he's probably a Hall of Famer. I would think you put 5 years separation from what he's done to this point, but it's hard to believe he wouldn't be voted into the Hall of Fame. They're a little easier on quarterbacks anyway, if you know, than say a right guard or right tackle as far as the Hall of Fame goes. But I would say yes, he's a Hall of Famer, but he still needs at least one more Super Bowl appearances to clinch it.
Okay. Mike, we appreciate your time. As always, we'll catch up with you next week. They're OTAs, man. Here we go. Like, yep. Broncos season is coming, man. It's fun. I love it. I think everyone's excited and can't wait to be, sort of documenting it all with you throughout the next year.
Yeah, that's basically 4 weeks. You got 3 weeks OTAs, and we see one practice a week during that time. And then the mandatory minicamp, we see all three of those sessions. So. Unless they go bowling on the last day, which they may.
Oh, Mike, now you're just trying to make me mad.
you're gonna trigger some folks. Hey, Mike, we'll catch up with you the next week, man.
All right,
there he goes. That was Mike Kliss, courtesy of Bet River Sportsbook. I want to bounce that question off you just a little bit later, because I think it's a fun one. We've sort of been going back and forth for it. I think reasonable minds can disagree on it.
I don't.
Okay.
And I also think you should be the new presenter for the Hall of Fame just based on how you asked that question. Talk about leading the witness.
Hang tight. I thought it was totally diplomatic. hang tight. We'll circle back to that. But in the meantime, the next step in Mission 16W begins in a few hours. Can the Avalanche put the Blues in a 2-0 hole? We'll dive into it next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.